Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Welcome, curious listeners, to another deep dive. Today, we're tearing into a really thought-provoking book, India's Greatest Minds, Spiritual Masters, Philosophers, and Savants by Mukunda Rao. And this isn't just, you know, a list of famous names. It's more like a journey into the heart of what makes Indian thought so, well, vibrant and enduring.
Wow, absolutely. And what a deep dive it promises to be. You can sort of forget your typical history books or those collections of revered saints. Rao's book gives us this really powerful kind of revisionist look. He argues that India's most influential thinkers were actually, at their core, radical dissenters.
Radical dissenters.
Yeah, profound iconoclasts, you know, relentlessly questioning everything. They weren't just carrying on tradition. They were often breaking it wide open.
That's wow. It completely challenges the usual understanding, doesn't it? So instead of just like smooth progression of ideas.
Exactly. Instead of smooth progression or dogma, Rao shows us that the real dynamism, the energy of Indian thought, it's fueled by this continuous tradition of rebellion, of critical inquiry.
Okay, so why does this matter for us listening today?
Oh, I think it offers a really fresh lens, you know, a way to understand heritage, spirituality, even maybe how we can bravely question our own accepted truths, especially now with so much information flying around.
Right, so this deep dive is kind of a shortcut to grasp this vital aspect of Indian intellectual history, but without feeling, you know, totally overwhelmed by it all.
Precisely. It gets to the core.
Now, to really get a handle on the book's claims, which sound pretty bold, it's probably worth understanding the author a bit more, Mukunda Rao.
Yeah, definitely. So he's an Indian author, and he was actually a professor of English. His life and his work are just deeply immersed in Indian philosophy and spirituality.
Ah, interesting. An English professor background. How do you think that shapes his approach? Does it let him see things maybe a historian or a philosopher even might miss?
That's a really good question. I think it makes a huge difference, actually. His literature background gives him this unique angle for looking at these figures. He sees not just the philosophical concepts, you know, the abstract ideas, but the human drama, the narrative, the sheer bravery in their personal stories.
So he's not just reporting facts, he's telling their story.
Exactly. Telling a story about courage, about conviction. He approaches it almost like, well, you could say he's a critical insider.
It's a critical insider. How so?
Well, he's deeply respectful of the Indian spiritual quest. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, he's resolutely non-sectarian. He's just not willing to accept dogma simply because it is dogma.
Okay, I see.
And you see this intellectual honesty in his other books, too. He's written biographies on some pretty enigmatic figures like Ramana Maharshi and Yuji Krishnamurti. So he's really uniquely positioned, I think, to look at everyone from, say, the ancient sage Yajnavalkya right up to someone like Ambedkar in the modern era, with both real empathy for their journey, but also a sharp analytical eye for their, well, their radical impact.
Okay, let's unpack the book's central idea then, India's Greatest Minds. It proposes that the people who genuinely shaped Indian thought weren't the conformists, not the ones upholding tradition. Instead, they were the radical dissenters. Rao argues their greatness wasn't really in giving final answers, but more in asking the really unsettling questions. And often, actively dismantling established beliefs. That's quite a take, isn't it?
It really is. It's bold. And if you connect that to the bigger picture, the book's core purpose, you could say, is to rescue these 20 key thinkers from what Rao calls the amber of myth and reverence.
The amber of myth. I like that phrase.
Yeah. He wants us to see them as, you know, living, breathing people, often fiercely confrontational individuals. He's showing how Indian philosophy actually evolved through these ruptures, through debates, not just some smooth kind of harmonious progression.
So less like a quiet library, more like a lively debate club.
Exactly. Less a gallery of saints, more a dynamic arena of intellectual wrestling, you could say.
And the journey the book takes us on, it covers a huge span of time, right? Almost three millennia.
Oh, yeah. It's both chronological and thematic. Starts way back with the ancient sage Yajnavalkya and that famous neti idea.
Not this.
Right. Then it moves through the big heterodox movements, the Buddha, Mahavra. Then you get Adi Shankara and Advaita Vedanta, the bhakti poets like Kabir, all the way up to modern giants like Gandhi, Ambedkar, and even those really radical iconoclasts, J. Krishnamurti and U.G. Krishnamurti.
Yeah, that's quite a lineup. And it covers everything from deep philosophy, metaphysics, ethics.
To the critical point where spirituality meets social and political life. It's presented as this interconnected story, really, about the human search for truth, for freedom, for meaning.
So ultimately, Ryle's trying to break down this idea of a single Indian spirituality.
Exactly. Deconstruct that monolithic, often way too simple idea and show it for what he believes it is, a vibrant, argumentative tradition. He highlights the tensions, the contradictions, shows there's no single Indian way of thinking, but this rich tapestry woven from constant challenge and questioning. It's refreshing, a real counter-narrative.
Okay, so let's dive into some of these thinkers. How did this audacious claim that descent is India's true spiritual engine actually play out over time? Ryle starts right at the beginning, doesn't he, with the ancient masters?
He does. He establishes the theme right away, showing even the most revered figures were often asking radical questions in their own time. He begins with Yajnavalkya, the Upanishadic sage, and Rao presents him not just as, you know, a standard Vedic scholar, but as this philosophical giant who shifted the focus away from external rituals toward internal self-knowledge, Atmavidya.
And the key concept there is neti, neti, not this, not this.
Precisely, which is, when you think about it, an ancient form of radical skepticism. It reminds us that sometimes the clearest way to understand something profound isn't by adding descriptions, but by rigorous negation.
Like intellectual decluttering.
Kind of. Stripping away what something isn't to get closer to its essence. It's a method that's maybe as relevant today, trying to filter information, as it was millennia ago, trying to grasp ultimate reality. It shows this fearless intellectual debate was there right at the dawn of Indian philosophy.
So building on that fearless internal inquiry, the story then really explodes with figures who took descent much further, right? Challenging not just rituals, but the very fabric of society and even the idea of the self, the great dissenters.
Yes, exactly. And here, of course, we encounter the Buddha. Rao portrays him, interestingly, more as a pragmatic psychologist and an ethical teacher, less like a divine figure.
Pragmatic psychologist, how so?
Well, his core teachings, like the Four Noble Truths, they're presented almost like a clinical diagnosis of human suffering, dukkha, and the Eightfold Path. That's the practical step-by-step cure. It focuses on ethical conduct, mental discipline, wisdom. It's less about believing dogma and more about a psychological framework for living well.
Okay, that makes sense.
And what's even more fascinating and radical for the time was his rejection of a permanent self, the concept of anatta. That was a complete departure from the established Brahmanical idea of an eternal soul, the Atman.
A huge break.
Massive. And then his sharp critique of the caste system. That was a social and philosophical earthquake.
A seismic shift, definitely. And then Rao brings in Mahavira, the founder of Jainism. A similar critique of ritual, maybe, but a different path.
Different emphasis, yeah. Mahavira's path was one of intense ethical rigor, built on principles like ahimsa nonviolence, but crucially, not just in action, but also in thought and word. Super demanding. Yeah. And he also introduced a parigraha, which is non-possession, non-attachment, and anekandavada, the many-sidedness of truth.
Anekandavada. That sounds interesting.
It's really profound. It's basically a doctrine that challenges any kind of absolutist thinking. It suggests reality can be viewed from multiple perspectives and no single one holds the complete truth.
So like intellectual humility built into the system.
Exactly. These weren't just new ideas floating around. Rao presents them as foundational ruptures. They fundamentally changed the intellectual landscape forever.
But then Rao also points out contradictions, even within this tradition of rebellion. He brings in Adi Shankara. Brilliant systematizer, right?
Absolutely. Rao fully acknowledges Shankara's genius in systematizing Advaita Vedanta. That's the non-dualistic philosophy, arguing for the ultimate oneness of the individual self, the Atman, and ultimate reality, Brahman.
The wave in the ocean idea.
Kind of, yeah. Like realizing a single ocean just appears as countless distinct waves, but fundamentally it's all just ocean. That core oneness was Shankara's brilliant non-dualistic insight.
There's a but, isn't there?
There is. Rao offers a critical view, too. He highlights this tension between Shankara's incredibly lofty philosophical non-dualism and his social conservatism, particularly his upholding of the caste system.
Wow. So this brilliant mind articulating profound unity yet supporting social division. Does Rao explain that paradox or just present it?
He mostly presents it as a deep, maybe uncomfortable human contradiction. A reminder, perhaps, that even profound intellectual insight doesn't always lead to social revolution. Or maybe that even geniuses are products of their time, even while they transcend it in other areas. It definitely adds nuance, makes Shankara more complex.
Yeah, definitely more complex. Okay, so after Shankara, we move towards the path of the heart, the medieval mystics.
Exactly. Another wave of rebellion, but with a different flavor, shifting focus from, you know, abstract metaphysics to really passionate, egalitarian, and often anti-establishment movements. Rao highlights figures like Basava, Kabir, and Guru Nanak.
Kabir sounds fascinating. The weaver mystic.
Oh, yeah. Rao presents him as the ultimate iconoclast, really vivid descriptions of his fierce poetry attacking the hypocrisy he saw in both Hinduism and Islam, sometimes with real biting humor.
Like what?
Like saying, you know, a brick in a mosque, a stone in a temple, they're just structures. God is beyond all that. His message was about a universal truth that transcended all religious labels, spoke directly to ordinary people in their language.
Powerful stuff. And Guru Nanak.
The founder of Sikhism, Rao portrays him as a great synthesizer, a visionary. His teachings blended elements of Hindu bhakti, that devotional path, and Islamic Sufism. He forged this unique path, emphasizing selfless service, seva, equality for everyone, and remembering the one God, Ek Onkar. These mystics really democratized spirituality, didn't they? Took it out of the hands of priests and scholars and into daily life.
Right. And then as we get closer to our time, the modern minds, the questions become even more immediate, grappling with colonialism, social injustice.
Exactly. This is a crucial section. Rao explores these intense intellectual and political debates. You have Mahatma Gandhi, of course, his ideas of satya, truth, and ahimsa, nonviolence, becoming the spiritual bedrock of his politics, a profound mix of personal ethics and the fight for national liberation.
But Rao positions Ambedkar as Gandhi's greatest challenger.
Yeah.
That's a strong statement.
Yeah.
How does Rao explore Ambedkar's critique? What made it so devastating?
He gives it full weight. Ambedkar's critique of Hinduism, as Rao presents it, was devastating because Ambedkar argued it was inseparable from the oppressive caste hierarchy. You couldn't just reform caste, he said. It was intrinsically linked to the religion's core tenets, creating an inherently unjust social order.
So not just a social problem, but a religious one at its root.
In Ambedkar's view, yes. And Rao portrays his intellectual journey, which culminated in his conversion to Buddhism, as this profound act of both political and spiritual liberation, a final, total rejection of a system that denied dignity to millions.
Wow.
The Gandhi-Ambedkar debate, as Rao shows it, is absolutely central to understanding the unresolved tensions still present in modern India. It was this huge clash between reforming from within versus needing a radical departure.
Okay. And then finally, the book takes us to the radical deconstructionist, pushing dissent to its absolute limit.
Yeah, figures who challenged the very idea of a spiritual path. J. Krishnamurti, J.K., after he famously dissolved the Order of the Star, which was basically set up to present him as the world teacher.
Right. He walked away from it all.
Completely. He spent the rest of his life urging listeners to reject all spiritual authority, pointedly including his own. His core message, truth is a pathless land, is explored really deeply, emphasizing choiceless awareness, seeing the world without our conditioning.
That's such a powerful challenge, isn't it?
Mm.
Especially today, with so many gurus and systems promising answers. What does it even mean to be a light unto yourself? JK really forces you to confront your own reliance on external guidance.
It really does. And then Rao includes UG Krishnamurti. He presents UG as the anti-guru.
The anti-guru.
Yeah. Relentlessly negating the entire spiritual enterprise. Enlightenment, God, the self, the search itself. He declared it all basically a fiction created by thought.
Whoa.
His inclusion is really provocative. It's a fitting end, in a way, because it forces us to question every single assumption we might hold about spirituality. He basically asks, what if this whole search is the problem? It's like an intellectual slap in the face, but maybe in the most liberating way possible.
Okay, wow. So pulling all this together, what are the core themes? What does Rao really want us to take away from this incredible, challenging journey?
Well, I think the primary message, the big one, is that dissent has always been the engine of spiritual evolution in India. The Buddha dissented from the Vedas, Ambedkar dissented from Hinduism, J. Krishnamurti dissented from the whole idea of a guru. Rao is really arguing that this tradition of questioning, of rebellion, is the living heart of India's intellectual heritage, which makes you think, right, how often do we truly question what we're told versus just accepting it because it's tradition, or, you know, that's just how things are done.
That's a great point. And another major theme seems to be the sheer diversity of paths, right?
Oh, absolutely. Rao masterfully shows there's no single monolithic path to ultimate reality. You see profound intellectual inquiry side by side with ecstatic devotion, selfless action, silent self-awareness, even that radical negation we just talked about. This incredible diversity is presented as a source of immense richness, a beautiful reminder that, you know, our way isn't the only way. There's deep wisdom in appreciating different perspectives.
and crucially, how these ideas connect to our world, to society. Rao seems to argue strongly against seeing spirituality as purely personal, purely private.
He really does. For thinkers like Basava, Nanak, Gandhi, and especially Ambedkar, the quest for spiritual truth was just inextricably linked to the fight for social justice, for equality, for human dignity. They saw an unjust social order not just as a political problem, but as a fundamental spiritual and moral evil, something you had to confront.
That's fascinating. It forces us to think about how our personal ethics, our inner truth, actually plays out in the wider world. How does it connect outward action?
And tied to that, there's this recurring theme of deep suspicion towards institutionalized religion, towards priestly classes, towards just blindly following scripture.
Yeah, from Kabir's attacks on hypocrisy.
All the way to J. Krishnamurti's insistence that truth is a pathless land. The book really celebrates individual inquiry over just accepting collective dogma. And that resonates powerfully today, doesn't it? In a world where many are questioning established institutions and inherited beliefs, it pushes towards a more personal, unmediated search for meaning.
And one last theme, maybe, the humanizing aspect.
Yes. Rao deliberately strips away the layers of myth, deification. He shows their struggles, their contradictions, like we talked about with Shankara, your passionate engagement with the problems of their specific time. It makes them profoundly more relatable, I think. Their ideas become more accessible. It shows that great wisdom often comes from messy, complex human experience, not from some perfect, unattainable pedestal. They were human, wrestling with huge questions, just like us.
Yeah, that makes them feel much closer. Now, the book isn't just dense philosophy. Rao highlights some powerful ideas that really stick. While we're paraphrasing, let's touch on a few nuggets that capture the essence.
Good idea. Where should we start? Maybe right back at the beginning.
Okay. First, Yajnalalka's neti neti. The ultimate reality can only be understood by negating all that it is not. Not this, not this. It is not this. It is not that.
And the brilliance there, the insight, is how it captures that Upanishadic method, the via negativa. It acknowledges that the ultimate is just beyond our concepts. It's about shedding definitions, shedding assumptions, to even approach the ineffable. A kind of profound intellectual humility, still revolutionary, really.
Definitely. Then jump forward to Ambedkar's searing critique of caste. To uphold caste is to deny the very foundation of justice and humanity. A religion that sanctifies inequality is not a religion, but a disease. True liberation lies in annihilating caste.
Wow. Just hearing it like that, it's so powerful, so unvarnished, it reframes caste entirely, not just a social issue, but a fundamental moral and spiritual failing. He's essentially saying that any system that dehumanizes is inherently unspiritual. That's crucial for understanding his impact, the depth of his rebellion.
It really is. Okay, then J. Krishnamurti's famous line, "Truth is a pathless land. You cannot approach it by any path whatsoever, by any religion. By any sect. It cannot be brought down, organized, or made into a dogma."
And that is just the ultimate declaration of spiritual freedom, isn't it? A complete rejection of all organized paths, all systems. It takes that tradition of dissent we've been talking about to its absolute logical conclusion. It dismantles even the idea of a path, suggesting truth is found not by following anyone, but by intensely observing for yourself.
Right. And finally, let's include Mukunda Rao's own thesis, which kind of frames the whole book. The great minds of India were not saints in an ivory tower, but passionate rebels engaged in a relentless battle against dogma, ignorance, and injustice.
Yes, that's the lens Rao wants us to use. It's a powerful call, really. Move beyond just simple reverence. Appreciate their courage, their intellectual honesty, and the genuinely revolutionary impact they had on both thought and society.
So this isn't just fascinating history. Rao implies it's a source of insights we can use today. How can we actually apply some of these radical ideas in modern life?
Well, for starters, I think we can try to cultivate that critical thinking, adopt that questioning spirit we see in these minds. Think of Yajnavalkya's relentless inquiry or Ambedkar's rational critique. It encourages us to question our own inherited beliefs, societal norms, the claims of authority figures, whether they're religious, political, media, whatever. Instead of just scrolling past a headline, maybe ask, hang on, is that really true? Or what's the assumption behind that?
Good point. Questioning the unquestioned, and on a more personal level.
On a personal level, the book actually offers some practical tools for introspection, for self-inquiry. Nomana Maharshi's simple, direct question, "Who am I?" can be used as a really powerful meditative technique. a way to cut through the mental chatter, maybe gain deeper self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And the Buddhist teachings on mindfulness, they're incredibly applicable to daily life. Managing emotions, living more presently, just observing our thoughts without getting completely swept away by them.
And thinking about connecting this outwards to our communities, the wider world.
Well, by showcasing the validity of so many different paths, the book acts as a powerful antidote to fundamentalism, to dogmatism, doesn't it? It helps foster genuine pluralism, tolerance. It kind of echoes that sentiment from Ramakrishna, as many faiths, so many paths. It can inspire a more open-minded, respectful approach to different beliefs, different cultures, especially in our increasingly polarized world. It encourages looking for common ground, maybe, not just focusing on differences.
Yeah, that feels really important right now. And what about for people who are actively on a spiritual quest? Those final chapters on JK and UG.
Ah, yes. For anyone engaged in that kind of search, those chapters offer a really radical, potentially quite liberating perspective. They suggest that the constant striving, the constant searching for some future state of enlightenment or arrival might actually be the main obstacle.
The search itself is the problem.
That's the question they raise. Are we sometimes so busy searching for a destination that we completely miss the profound insights available just by experiencing the present moment exactly as it is without judgment? It's a deep thought for anyone feeling, you know, stuck on a kind of spiritual treadmill.
Definitely something to ponder.
Yeah.
So wrapping up, what struck you most from this deep dive into Rao's work? What's the big takeaway for you?
For me, I think it was just how vibrant and, well, argumentative India's spiritual tradition really is, as Rao presents it. It's
yeah.
not the static museum of ancient dogmas. It's a dynamic, constantly evolving conversation about the deepest questions of human existence. And the idea that dissent isn't just tolerated, but it's actually seen as sacred, as necessary for growth, that really resonated. It feels like a powerful call to intellectual courage for all of us.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, it was the humanization of these, you know, towering figures, seeing them not as flawless mythical beings, but as brilliant, courageous, and yes, sometimes flawed human beings who dared to think for themselves, who dared to challenge the status quo. Their real greatness maybe lies less in the final answers they gave, and more in the depth and the sheer fearlessness of the questions they asked, and the paths they forged through that questioning. It really does offer a shift, doesn't it? Away from just blind reverence towards critical engagement, towards exciting personal exploration.
Well said. It invites us into the conversation.
So our final provocative thought for you, our listeners. What orthodoxies in your life or in society around you might be ripe for a little radical questioning? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.